On today's episode of The Good Word with Goodwill, we talk about the Bucks moving on from Adrian Griffin and maybe welcoming Doc Rivers. We also discuss Team USA's Olympic roster, and we tell you which games to watch this week. All that and producer John on this episode of The Good Word.
Good Word with Goodwill on Yahoo Sports. Ball don't lie. And here is Vince Goodwill.
Welcome to The Good Word. My name is Vincent Goodwill, senior NBA reporter for Yahoo Sports. We are part of the Ball Don't Lie podcast. Get us wherever you get your podcast. It is Wednesday. It is a solo show. Producer John and I, we have a lot to talk about, John, because yesterday the Milwaukee Bucks decided we are going to make a coaching change. And it just was by chance that the Milwaukee Bucks had been in Detroit. I was able to be around that team for a couple of days, and they got two wins over the Pistons, but they were not good wins, right? And such hours, mere hours after they left Detroit and landed back in Milwaukee, they fired Adrian Griffin. And a few minutes after that, literally a few minutes, it's funny how these things happen. They had a replacement seemingly lined up, Doc Rivers, who has been an unofficial consultant to the Milwaukee Bucks. And of course, Doc Rivers, championship coach with the Boston Celtics, then with the Clippers, then with the Philadelphia 76ers, now currently with ESPN ABC, where he actually does a really good job on the games in the broadcast booth. It looks like he will be returning back to the area that he spent his college years, where he was at Marquette. He's a Chicago native. And I just found all of that really interesting. The conversation about it around Adrian Griffin's firing was really interesting, because you look at the record and you're saying they're 30-13. They're the number two team in the NBA, not just number two in the East. They have a better record than everybody in the Western Conference. And they have the second best offensive rating. That defensive rating makes you think something. That strength of schedule, they've had the easiest schedule in the league, and then they're going to go out west after a few games at home, and a lot of things were going to come to bear. So the natural questions you have, why? Because it can't be the record, but it can't be the how. It can't be the what, but it's going to be the how. And it's the way that team looked. And when you talk to people around the league, let's just back this up for a second, right? Let's just back this up for a second, John, because I'm going to bring John in, because John has thoughts. But there has been speculation surrounding Adrian Griffin literally from the moment that he took over this job. For those who are consistent listeners of this here show, Jared Greenberg from NBA TV was on with us a couple of weeks ago, and he spoke about it. He was pretty strong about, there's a lot of smoke coming out of there. There's some things that I see that I don't necessarily like. And then, boom, something like this happens. So it's never the Pistons game. It's never something that's very micro. It's always going to be the big picture. Now, what do you mean by big picture? It's not just the schedule, right? It's not even just the ages of the Milwaukee Bucks core four. Brooke Lopez, 35 years old. Damian Lillard, 33. Chris Middleton, 32. Giannis, 29, but with a lot of, let's say, city miles on his body. A lot of miles on his knees and on his back. Things that you cannot discount when you are forming a championship team to win now. Now, there's various ways that we can attack this. One is, did Adrian Griffin deserve to be fired? I think deserve is a matter of subjectivity. There are some people who are saying, why didn't you just let him finish the season? And by and large, I can understand why people say that. But when you've made a decision as a franchise that this is not the guy, no matter when it is, I am a fan of just rip the Band-Aid off and call it a day. I'm not a person that says whether you have a good team, great team, bad team. If the players have decided that this is not a guy that we can believe in, regardless of record, if this is not a guy we can believe in, and the organization feels the same way, then you do it now and you move on. You don't hold on to a bad relationship because it looks good on the outside. And by saying looks good on the outside, I mean the record. The record is gaudy, right? But when you dive a little deeper, when you look at Damian Lillard's numbers, when you look at the situation with Terry Stotts, which I don't think is as bad as people were making it out to be. I think you had a guy who was a first-year coach in Griff and a coach who had been a head coach for a long time in Terry Stotts. Sometimes those things sound better in theory than they do in actual application because someone has to be in charge, and someone who's long been in charge cannot be in charge anymore. And those dynamics cannot be predicted. Those dynamics are often very tricky and messy. But because those dynamics involve Damian Lillard coming to a new team a couple of days before training camp, and he's an offensive wizard, you have to figure some things out there. I think that foretold future troubles. I don't think that was something that was so egregious that it was a sign that Adrian Griffin was not going to be the man for this particular job. And John is a big proponent of continuity. He's a big proponent of, look at Michael Malone, look at Eric Spoelstra. I'm with you, John. I get it.
All right. Here's where I can jump in. And I had one thought running through my head while you were going through that. And I'm going to ask it. I know that it's a different situation, but I'm interested just your immediate reaction to this thought.
Mm-hmm.
How is this situation with Adrian Griffin and the Bucks today, January 2024,
mm-hmm.
different significantly than what the Boston Celtics went through with Joe Mazzulla last year at this time? Because the Celtics record was really good, but there was some talk about, oh, Mazzulla doesn't call timeouts. He gives these weird quotes in press conferences. I think, personally, no reporting. I have no reporting. I am not a reporter. I think the Celtics are led by Brad Stevens and a group that preaches patience and continuity.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the Bucks front office, like, here's the thing, that the Bucks were winning. Now, the defense was bad, but the Bucks were winning. And normally, if you get a situation where it's like, oh, this coach is in a little bit too deep, I don't know if he's the one who can do it with this team, the next sentence is usually, who are they going to bring in to help him, to support him? That was the question with Joe Mazzulla. Oh, all the assistants left. They went with Ime Udoka, and he needs more support. He needs help. He needs veteran assistant coaches, or let's go get Jeff Van Gundy and bring him in to be a consultant. We're gonna teach Joe Mazzulla how to get this thing going because he can't do it on his own. And granted, it sounds like Adrian Griffin had mentors of some sort. He was getting help from some people, which may or may not have included Doc Rivers himself. But it didn't feel like the front office with the Bucks was going, Adrian's in over his head. Let's get him some support. Let's get him some help. I think they were the ones who were creating the smoke in the air just by saying he's in over his head. I don't know if this is going to last. And then that just built up steam until it got to the point where they're like, oh, well, everyone's talking about it now. And I was like, everyone's talking about it, I think, because the Bucks front office didn't come out with a plan on what to do about it, how they were going to support him, how they were going to help him and make it work. It was just general concern. And in the NBA world, if you throw out general concern, everyone fires up the trade machine. Everyone starts looking at who are the other coaches out there that could come in. And then the rumors really get bad.
Well, there's two differences of what you said. And I don't think what you said was anywhere near wrong, but there's two differences. You said, what's the difference between the Celtics and Joe Mazzulla and the Bucks with Adrian Griffin? I'll give you one big difference. He's 6'10", runs like a deer, and is the best two-way player in the game. His name is Giannis, okay? That's the difference in terms of how an organization is led. The Celtics, Jason Tatum doesn't have that type of flex. Giannis has that type of flex. Giannis put all of his power behind Adrian Griffin. If people remember, Monty Williams was a name that was in the running early. Knock, knock, Nick Nurse's name was really in the running really early after they fired Mike Budenholzer, and his name just disappeared. His name disappeared, and then he wound up going to Philly. And if your franchise player who's under contract but is facing an extension puts his power behind one particular coach, it's a hard thing in today's NBA to go against that. Now, back in the day, you had Michael Jordan loving Doug Collins and not wanting him to go, and then Phil Jackson comes in, and, you know, a year after that, the rest is history. You also had Michael Jordan having Charles Oakley as his absolute best friend on a team, if not in the league, and Jerry Krause traded him for Bill Cartwright, and Jordan was incensed. Different NBA. Both of those things happened to work out, but people were willing to put their behinds on the line for what they felt was for the betterment of the franchise in that moment. Another back-in-the-day reference. Paul Westhead won a championship with the Lakers in 80. And then in 82, if you guys saw Winning Time, you could clearly see, despite that that was dramatized, that those two figures were not going to be able to coexist. Out goes Westhead, who had a 682 winning percentage or something like that. In comes Pat Riley. Boom. Four more titles. Showtime is born. Different situations, different NBA, different ownership structures, power structures, front office structures, where back then the players mattered not as much as they matter now as far as in front offices and ownership structures. And now when you had Giannis throwing his power behind Adrian Griffin. And clearly, and things that people have pointed out to me over the past, not just the past couple of days, but clearly a lot of smoke. People were saying, I don't know if AG has this team. You can tell by, and this is what people were telling me, you can tell by the things that the players are saying in the post games that they don't believe in him. Remember, Bobby Portis, there was a big story that came out, Bobby Portis imploring for leadership. Step up and take the reins. Like, players generally don't have to do that, but coaches are, because coaches are coaches. Coaches want to exert themselves. Coaches want to show everyone that they are in charge. Adrian Griffin being in the spot because he had been a role player and he had been an assistant coach for so long. I don't necessarily think that he was tiptoeing in the beginning, but I do think he was trying to find his way, which is what happens when you're a first-year coach, which is why generally first-time head coaches do not take over championship teams or teams with championship aspirations. And if a franchise is willing to move on so quickly when the numbers say, or at least some of the numbers say, this is still a good team, there has to be things going on behind the scenes. There has to be, we'll say, players saying, something isn't right here. And here's a stat that I'm not even sure if people know this. The Milwaukee Bucks won the championship in 2021. They slayed all the Dragons. They came down from 2-0 to the Phoenix Suns and also the Brooklyn Nets in that series. Since 2021, they have won a grand total of one playoff series. One. Right? Knocked down the first round this past year. Knocked down the second round to the Boston Celtics the year before. Usually championship teams come back with some level of force unless you're just on the total back end of a run. Usually, you know, MVPs and championships are won in clusters. The last 5 years has been five different champions. But the Bucks were built to be a contender. You had Giannis at 26, 27 in his prime. You had a pretty good roster around him. And then now you add Damian Lillard. And yes, Dame and Malik Beasley are not guys that you would consider defensive stoppers. But you still have Giannis, who's the best two-way force in the game, as I just mentioned, especially defensively. Brooke Lopez is one of the best rim protectors. There's no way that you should be this bad on defense. And this unorganized defensively. It looks like they don't know what they're doing, or at least that they don't believe and what they're doing. So while, and to go back to John's question, when Ime Udoka was like surprisingly fired, you know, late into the coaching cycle when they hired Joe Mazzulla, Brad Stevens selected Joe Mazzulla. That ownership group selected Joe Mazzulla. This suggests to me in Milwaukee that John Horst and all those guys were not fully sold on Adrian Griffin as a head coach. That's what it says to me. Now we get to Doc Rivers, right? We get to Doc Rivers. That 2008 championship with the Boston Celtics, it's collecting a little dust, right? Collecting a little dust. I think Doc is the type of coach whose best work is done on the try-hard teams. By what I say try-hard, I mean that Orlando team that he was with 2 decades ago. Even the Celtics team that went to the finals in 2010 and the KG-less team in 2009, those were more try-hard teams than, you know, juggernauts because they were a little bit older. That sweet spot was in 2008, and then almost everybody started crashing down a little bit after that because those guys were so old. And Doc was able to squeeze everything he could out of those teams. The teams with the Clippers were top-heavy. Similar here, right? Blake Griffin, Chris Paul, not a lot of depth there. And then you go to Philadelphia, where it's Doc, it's James Harden, Joel Embiid, and before James Harden, Ben Simmons. And they could not get out of the second round. Now, granted, this Eastern Conference is better than what it used to be, but this Eastern Conference is not impossible, okay? And the second round is not what the Milwaukee Bucks are aiming for, okay? Now, John alluded to Adrian Griffin having advisors, or as he told me following what turned out to be his last game, he said, I have mentors. I have mentors that I'm actively engaged with and talking to, mentors in the coaching business who are helping me out. And I asked him, I said, Adrian, who are you talking about? I said, you care to name him? He said, no, I don't. I don't want to name him. I said, okay. Now, I knew that there was smoke behind AG. Did I think that something would happen then? No. Did I believe that something could happen before the All-Star break? Absolutely. Regardless of record. I thought the upcoming West Coast trip that they're going to go on, where the schedule gets really tough, had they lost a few games there, that something could happen because ownership in the front office was looking for something to happen. And I asked AG, like, what about the noise? And he said, I try not to pay attention to it. I stay off of social media. That noise was at his door. And you would hope and you would like to believe that that noise wasn't in his ear. You would hope. And we don't know the setup. Let's be very careful before we say something irresponsible. And I don't want to say anything irresponsible. There's been reporting from The Athletic that Doc Rivers has been an unofficial advisor to Adrian Griffin and the Milwaukee Bucks for some time, basically since the in-season tournament in December in Las Vegas, where the Bucks were there. And if Doc Rivers turns out to be the head coach, there will be accusations of dirty macking. There's just no way around it. It's going to be accusations of dirty macking. I'm not accusing him because I think you got to be really careful about that. And Doc Rivers, to me, has been nothing but a stand-up guy. Like, yeah, there's some stuff with Doc Rivers, but I don't think he's a bad dude. I don't think that he would necessarily go behind a first-year head coach, a black first-year head coach. Mind you, knowing how hard it is for brothers to get jobs in the NBA, it would be really, 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 really bad if that were to happen. It'd be really bad. I'm just going to say that. I don't think that Doc would do that. But I don't think it was going to take Doc Rivers to tell John Horst and the Milwaukee Bucks ownership, hey, this ain't the guy. I don't think Doc Rivers has those powers of persuasion. I think clearly the idea was planted well before we were hearing about this, guys, in November. Do you know how hard it is? Okay, I'm gonna give you another example. I just want to explain this to you guys so you guys can get this. David Blatt seemed like a really nice man, But he seemed like the most ill-equipped head coach I've ever come across in the league. It was such to the point, John, I don't know if you remember this. It was such a running joke that I had put out like a sarcastic tweet. I was covering the Bulls at the time, and I put out a sarcastic tweet. And people thought that David Blatt had actually said it because it was such, he was treated as such a joke. Like I had said something, you know, President Obama, when he was president, was coming to a Bulls-Cavs game to watch LeBron and watch David Blatt, you know, watch LeBron and watch the Bulls. And David Blatt was always known to say, you know, nothing is big here. Nothing's too big for me. So I think I put out like some sarcastic tweet or whatever. And it was like, I performed in front of many presidents before, you know, like that sort of thing. And people just took it as gospel. I had to be like, y'all, it's a joke. It's a joke. But that's how unserious people took David Blatt. And he was given a full season and a half. He was given a full season to go to the finals in 2015 and the half of the next season. And then they got his ass out of there. Ty Lue steps in. The Cavs go to the finals again against Golden State. 3-1 lead. You know the rest. And David Blatt was given a season and a half. Adrian Griffin was given 43 games. I'll give you another example. Mo Cheeks. Mo Cheeks was given 50 games in Detroit in 2013-14. That was, you know, Brandon Jennings, Josh Smith, Andre Drummond, Greg Monroe, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope as a rookie. Like, and he was given 50 games and unceremoniously fired on a Sunday morning in which my phone was lost in the snow in downtown Detroit. Weird, very, very weird night. That won't be an episode of Love Doctor, but that'll be in the episode of some of weird things that have happened to Vinny in his professional life. All right. This is 43 games into the season and you're the number two team, but clearly there's something there. Stuff is going to come out more. It's more than the defense. It's more than the usage of Damian Lillard. It's more than just whatever happened with Terry Stotts. It's not any one thing. It's all of those things. It's never one thing, y'all. Whenever we try to make and pare things down to, this was it. Giannis was drawing up plays on the sideline, and that just shows you Adrian Griffin was incompetent. I don't think he was incompetent. I just think that the Milwaukee Bucks did not believe that he had shown enough, especially in a season where so much is on the line. All those guys are older and getting older. The Celtics are good and getting better. All these teams in the East are loading up. Never forget, it happens on the same day the Miami Heat trade for Terry Rozier, right? They trade for Terry Rozier. And then the Bucks, a couple hours later, say, hey, man, we can't do this no more. So there is a lot, I promise y'all, there's a lot going on. It's never any one thing. It's a bunch of things. And it did not clearly engender confidence in Adrian Griffin, who hopefully I believe will get another chance. I just think it was probably a bad fit to have this guy moving 6 inches over to the left for his first head coaching job for a team that probably has no margin for error. No margin for error, meaning Mike Budenholzer. And now presumably you're bringing in Doc Rivers, who has not gotten back to the NBA Finals since 2010 and has coached nothing but contenders since he's been in the coaching game. The Celtics were contenders until they weren't. Then he goes to the Clippers and had to shepherd that Donald Sterling situation. But they were never able to get to the conference finals. They got to the conference finals with Ty Lue when he was gone. And then the Philadelphia 76ers, a team that a lot of people just do not believe in. They didn't believe in them. And there was that collapse against the Atlanta Hawks. There was the Miami series. They've had some underachieving situations. And I'm of the belief, guys, that the 3-1 thing with Doc Rivers, because people would say, man, Tupac could come back against Doc Rivers. I get it. But in the micro, just like when I say everything is not one thing with Adrian Griffin, everything is not one thing with Doc Rivers. It's not like, oh, he's a coach that's going to squander a 3-1 lead. Each of those situations were totally different, right? But he's going to have to come in, wear that, and be able to command respect and have order from a team that clearly, desperately wants and needs order as they go into the second half of this season. What you got, John?
I just want to ask you a quick question before we move on to the fun stuff.
Okay. This wasn't fun?
this was fun, but it's also sad. Like you,
it's very sad.
I know. I kind of wish Adrian Griffin had had more time to figure this out, more support. I wish instead of this, the Bucks were, hey, we're bringing in a new assistant coach, a defensive specialist. He's really going to help Adrian with the defense and then let Adrian focus on the offense and really leading the team and all of that.
Mm-hmm.
We have talked about on this podcast, you have talked about on this podcast more than once, that in the NBA, there's really a handful or less head coaches that can make a significant difference for your franchise. And we've talked about how guys like Spo and Ty Lue can coach circles around the guys that are not at that tier.
Mm-hmm.
Doc Rivers won a ring with three future Hall of Famers that mm-hmm. were all very well motivated to get that ring before their prime ran out.
Mm-hmm.
Since then, he's had a number of teams that probably have two Hall of Famers on them, two future Hall of Famers on them. And to your mm-hmm. point, has not even gotten back to the conference finals in 13 years.
Mm-hmm.
This is not necessarily, let's assume the Bucks go ahead and hire Doc Rivers as their head coach. This is not necessarily a bet that Doc Rivers is a good coach, because I think a lot of us can look at the stuff that he does, especially in a playoff series, and say he is not an elite coach. This is a bet that Adrian Griffin was so bad that Doc Rivers is going to bring them back to, I don't know, average coach, and that that is going to be the difference between them potentially winning or losing a championship. And honestly, I still think Spo is going to coach circles around Doc Rivers in a playoff series if given the opportunity. And in the past, despite tons of other success, including bringing a championship to Milwaukee, that wasn't enough for them to keep Coach Bud. So I don't see what this does for them outside of maybe appease the stars inside the locker room. I don't think Doc Rivers gives them a much higher ceiling. I think he just maybe raises the floor a little bit.
Well, I don't disagree with you, especially on that last part. It definitely raises the floor because you cannot have games where you lose by 50 to the Cleveland Cavaliers. Cavaliers team that, while surging, is without Darius Garland and without Evan Mobley. And I have my last note on coaching in general in the NBA is this. Do you know my theory on coaching? Do you know my general philosophy on coaching? If you don't, I'll tell you. In a given year, I believe that there are, let's say, 5 to 6 or 5 to 7 good coaches, 5 to 7 bad coaches, and a bunch of dudes in between. I don't know if there's that. Everybody, if you ask a coach, every coach is great, right? When you listen to Jeff Van Gundy on whatever broadcast, man, every coach is John Wooden. Every coach is John Thompson. It's just different variations, different shades, and different colors, right? I don't believe that. But a big part of what makes a coach good is not about what you do on the blackboard. It's about how you inspire your players and get them to play for you and get them to, even if your strategy isn't the most sound or isn't revolutionary, if your players believe in it, they'll go out there and they'll play for you. You can see when guys are playing for someone and he's not necessarily like the greatest coach. I don't know how great Doc Rivers is in terms of X's and O's, but when he's at his best, you can see that his players are playing for him. Now, Doc Rivers has had Chris Paul, who his playoff jacket is not very good, right? In terms of, you know, some moments. James Harden, we've seen his movies. Now, James Harden's movies might be a little different this time around because he's not being asked to be the second best player on a team of consequence, those LA Clippers. But when he's being asked to be the best player or the second best player, you got something. You got problems. Joel Embiid, this year may be different, but playoff movies for Joel Embiid have not been great. I don't know how much you put on Doc Rivers. Now, Damian Lillard has had some moments. He's had some clunkers, right? Let's be clear. He's had some clunkers, but he's had some moments. Giannis has had moments of 50-piece in a closing game of the NBA Finals. You can't deny any of that. So the hope and the belief, like John was pointing out, is that maybe if the ceiling won't be raised, that you're not going to be able to get to the floor as often. You're not going to have those stinkers as much. And I don't believe they're trying to necessarily catch the Celtics for number one seed in the, you know, in the NBA. I don't think that comes a part of it. I think they want to be better equipped for the playoffs. And that's what everybody has been talking about. We want to have an identity. And a team like the Milwaukee Bucks, with so much continuity in terms of personnel, they should not be having conversations about identity 43 games into the season. So Doc, or whomever takes over this job, good luck. So John, 41 players were selected in the pool for Team USA for the 12-man roster for the Paris Games this summer. Before we go to a fun little exercise here, John, are you surprised about any names being left off, like Ja Morant or Draymond Green or even Cade Cunningham? Was there anybody that whose name, maybe those three, that jumped out to you?
I think if it was before this season, or especially before last season, I definitely would have been like, wow, how are those guys not on the list? But and Team USA basketball and the NBA are supposed to be separate things.
Mm-hmm.
But you can definitely see a world where they're going, we don't want to deal with Draymond and all the stuff he brings. Ja Morant is not, you know, ready for extracurriculars outside of his career, so we'll leave him off.
And he just said shoulder surgery.
Well, that too. It's possible he would have been on this list had he been, you know, balling and healthy. And mm-hmm. I think Cade has not proven himself to be a consistent enough player to play with this group. So there was a time in which I'd be surprised about those names being left off. I think I understand all the names that were left off. I actually kind of double checked, like, is there anyone that probably should have been included on this list that is not? And I think the answer is probably no. It's a good list. It's actually really hard to get down to 12 because it's such a wealth of talent.
You know what name? It literally just came to me because he had a highlight last night and his teammate is on said list. It's on this list. No Zion Williamson. Now, maybe he has Burberry plans this summer, so he doesn't want to go out to Paris. So maybe that's what it is. Now, John texted me last night and said, hey, it would be really fun to pick out 12 players. You know, build our own roster. Like, let's play the part of, you know, USA Basketball Managing Director Grant Hill, who I suppose we could have on this podcast and ask him about this. Good. I could call up Grant. But I didn't want to select 12. I got like 8 non-negotiables, like 8 dudes. And then, you know, we can go to the wild cards. I think John just selected his 12. So I want to know, John, do you want to go first?
I want to see if I can guess your 8.
All right. You see if you can guess. I'm going to write them down. Like, I just had them. I just have them in my head. So I'm just make sure that they are written down.
Write them down. You can write them while I'm talking, because I think the first 5 are going to be easy. The first 5 are the ones that we've been hearing about since Team USA dropped out of the FIBA World Cup in the offseason. LeBron James, Kevin Durant, Steph Curry, Anthony Davis. That's 4. Are those 4 on your list?
2 of those are on the list.
Wow, not all 4.
2 of those are on the list.
Okay. I was also going... Okay, so my 8 for you was going to be those 4 plus Embiid. That's 5. Plus Tatum. That's 6. And then the last 2 are going to be kind of guesses. They're going to be Kawhi and Devin Booker.
Devin Booker is correct.
Did you leave Curry off this?
No, Curry's on the list. And the reason I didn't put LeBron or Anthony Davis, for sure, and I think LeBron, the reason I didn't was because of health.
Okay.
Only because of health. Like, that's the reason I didn't put Kawhi on there, was because of health.
That's totally
fair. I'm not saying that they I'm not saying that they won't make the team. I'm saying I need to see what type of condition that their bodies will be in after the playoffs.
Right.
This to is, see if they will be willing.
Yeah, this is you an ideal I mean? List of like if they're healthy and feeling good after the season. But yeah, if the Clippers, you know, go to the NBA
when
you, finals.
When you're that old and you're LeBron, ain't no ideal.
Yeah, that's true.
So I will give you my 8.
Okay.
When I account for health. And one of the names from a health standpoint is slightly off, but I think I feel better about one of these names, all right?
Okay.
So here's my 8. My 8 non-negotiables when I consider health. Kevin Durant, because have you seen Kevin Durant in Olympic basketball? Unstoppable. Stephen Curry, because have you seen him in Olympic basketball? No, you haven't, because he hasn't been there, right? All right. Devin Booker, Anthony Edwards, Joel Embiid, Bam Adebayo, Jason Tatum, Tyrese Halliburton. And then you get to, for me, if it's a Scottie Barnes or a, and I think Scottie's probably more tail end, like a Paul George, because he can shoot and he can defend, right? Like De'Aaron Fox, because he's not a great shooter, I have questions. It's like, I'm not sure about that one, right? Anthony Davis would be perfect in international play if he were completely healthy. And he's been healthy all season. I'm not sure about Jaylen Brown. I'm not sure about Brandon Ingram. Aaron Gordon, maybe. Rough, rugged defender. Remember, international basketball, much more physical than we allow this NBA to be. So then after you get those, so basically after you get those 8, you start filling roles. Jimmy Butler's on the list. Y'all know. Y'all taking Jimmy Butler away from making coffee and cutting country records this offseason? Yeah, okay. You be the fool and think that he's signing up for that. Jaren Jackson Jr. did not look great in FIBA. So I don't know if I would bring him. I think, of course, he's on the list because you want to have him in the program year after year. But I don't know. Paolo Banchero, I think I would take him because you need someone to fill that, honestly, that future Carmelo KD super score. Not saying he's on their level, but he profiles that way, right? So that's why I say I start off with the 8, and then I go to a wing defender. I go to an extra big. I get maybe another ball handler, but I feel pretty good with Ant and Devin Booker as my 2 guards. I feel really, really good with those 2. I don't feel like we need to go anywhere else.
You know, you're probably right. And I'm like, I'm comparing the team I put together with kind of the team you put together. And yeah, there's a lot of maybes. I have a lot of maybes. And the big difference is I don't have Halliburton and I don't have Ant. And
you better have Ant.
I think I know where Ant's going to go. He's going to go to one of 2 places. Halliburton, I left off for 2 reasons. One, I don't think his defense is very strong, and I think this should be a team that focuses on 2-way play. And B, I'm not sure how tired he's going to be at the end of the season after carrying the Pacers all year. Ant probably should be on. The 2 people that Ant would probably replace, I don't have Banchero on my list, is I included Drew Holiday because I thought Drew Holiday played very well internationally in the FIBA World Cup. And I just think if you're looking for a 2-way guard who can kind of play either guard spot off the bench and really shut down an opposing guard defensively if you need him to, like, I think Drew is great for that. I also included Alex Caruso. And one of the reasons is Alex Caruso's
Bald Brotherhood?
Yeah, that's okay. One reason. Another reason is I feel like he's one of those players that internationally would be useful in that he never needs the ball in his hands. He's not going to complain about finishing with 2 points. A lot of these guys will. Ant would. And kind of rightfully so. And I also feel like if the other team has one of those annoying, you know, smallish guards that's tearing apart your team because you got a bunch of guys who were 6'7", 6'8", trying to play defense against them, I think Drew can help to shut him down, but Caruso can bother him.
And being annoying. I got you. That makes sense. Yeah, no, yeah. Look, I get it.
So that's why I included him. If you want to sub an Ant for Drew Holiday, I would get it. If you want to sub an Ant for Alex Caruso, I would totally get it. And then we both agree on Bam. We both agree on Embiid. We both agree on Durant, Curry, Booker. I included LeBron and AD and Kawhi. Outside of that, it's mostly the same list. But yeah, I mean, there's going to be really good players that don't get selected. You didn't even mention James Harden.
No, he's not. No, I think the age thing probably doesn't do it for
me.
We didn't
mention James Harden or Damian Lillard or Kyrie Irving, Trae Young. Trae Young stays out kind of for the same reasons that like Duncan Robinson wasn't considered and Cam Johnson weren't considered. But like there's going to be some like future Hall of Famers that are still playing really good NBA basketball that are going to get left.
They're just not. And some guys just not fit for NBA basketball. Here's the exercise I just thought of, guys. Hit me on Twitter at Vince Goodwill and let me know what you think your 8 should be, or tell me if you think my 8 is trash. Okay, fine. Now, of course, before we go, the NBA viewing guide for the week, for the rest of the week today is Wednesday. John, what are your 3 games that you want to focus on, that you want people to watch this weekend?
I wrote down 3 just in case we overlapped on some of them, but I'll tell you the 2 that I am most excited for. One is Celtics Heat. And as you mentioned, the Heat traded for Terry Rozier. And I love watching these matchups after a trade because you get to see, like, why did the Heat trade for Terry Rozier? How are they going to employ him against a Celtics team? And those matchups are always proven something to each other, right? Like, they're not quite playoff games, but they're pre-playoff games.
Yeah.
That's Thursday. And then same thing with Sixers and Nuggets on Saturday. We already saw that matchup. It was great. If we get Embiid and Jokic going at each other again on a Saturday night, it's going to be great. So those two for sure. And then the Mavericks are stumbling. They've been fighting through injuries and such. Oddly enough, they really miss Dante Exum, who they can't seem to get back on the floor. Making like a minimum contract and super important to their team. But they got to pick themselves up at some point. And tonight they play the absolutely scorching hot Phoenix Suns. So there's a good chance the Mavs lose that game by 30. And I certainly hope not. I hope the Mavericks learn something about themselves and at least make it a close one.
Well, I'm going to make this quick because I feel like it's going to be self-explanatory. Celtics Clippers. I've been on this Clippers bandwagon thing for a minute now since Harden got there, because I felt like if he's your third best player, you got some things going. And I feel like I'm going to be vindicated by this. I feel like they will wind up being, or maybe usurping, the Minnesota Timber Pups in the Western Conference standings. And the Celtics are just the Celtics. And I still think that despite losing at home to the Nuggets last week, I still feel like, A, they really want to maintain that home court advantage. But those issues in late game situations are glaring. And of course, same night, different location, Cavs and Bucks. Because I wonder if that's going to be the first game of a new head coach. Maybe it'll still be Joe Prunty, career interim, who I think this is his third stint as an interim, or at least his second. And but also because I just mentioned at the top of everything about with the Bucks and Cavs when they got blasted by 40 without Giannis on the floor. It's going to be a completely different energy. You're going to get a jolt. Jamal Crawford from NBA on TNT said, like, when you fire a coach and you bring someone new in, even if it's an interim, you're going to get a jolt. Very curious what they look like in the meantime. So that is all that we have for you today on The Good Word. Thanks to producer John and the entire team that works so hard behind the scenes on this podcast. Jake and Dan will be back for another episode of No Cap Room tomorrow. I will be back on Monday for another episode of The Good Word. Until then, everybody be safe.